This is Gino the announcer, and you are listening to the Barbell Program Podcast with Gita and Alex. The bar is loaded.
Because anyway, we have to clap. And now we're three persons.
We have to clap in a synchronized way. So I count like in Terminator 2. Like it's 1, 2, 3, clap, clap, okay?
Yeah.
So 1, 2, 3,
clap.
That's yes! Awesome. Yeah. Alex, you're going to do the introduction for the first time in English.
Well, hello to the weekly podcast.
Two weekly
podcast, the Bubble Program. And as you can hear, I'm talking in English. Yes, this is English. And we're doing the podcast in English because we have a special guest today. And he will introduce himself after my introduction of the video. And I want to apologize for the bad English of all three of us. Sean, perhaps you can introduce yourself. Of course, on the other side of the table, there's sitting Peter Hofstetter, as always, and we are proud to introduce Sean to you. Sean.
Hello.
You get introduced, and now introduce yourself.
I'll probably be better introducing in German, but we'll stick with English. Hello, everyone. My name's Sean, and I'm a pro powerlifting coach from Ireland. The reason that I'm here is because it's the best gym in the world, like as the guys have says. Earlier in my career or in life, I was an MMA fighter.
Be careful outside there.
But
take care.
Yeah, take care. Hasta la vista. But I've done that from I was 18 till I was 24. I had 17 fights. I lost 2 by decision.
So by decision.
Yeah. So that was back in the dark days when like Chuck Liddell and Tito Ortiz were running the show. And then some Irish guy, I don't know if you know of him, Conor McGregor. Yeah, he came on and became world champion and exploded the sport. But I kind of retired around 2014 and was, you know, trying to find something to do. And like I'd never lifted a weight. Probably curled kettlebells in a circuit class, you know, during that time. And then my wife Lauren, she wanted to do powerlifting. So we went online and tried to rip out just any program. And we found the Westside method, which is, you know, it was pretty popular. So we literally had no idea of the rules. We just sort of sat down and was like, we'll go to a competition and we'll see what happens. So I got to the competition and, of course, didn't know the rules. So she went for the competition. And after, a guy came up to me and says, maybe you should try powerlifting. And, you know, at that time, I was sort of on the fence about it because I didn't know what I was going to do. So anyway, Lauren decided to get a coach in Ireland, who is our coach now, Sean Ryan. And, you know, we just started working with him about 4.5 years ago. And in my first competition, I managed to pull like 300 kilos. And he says, wow, you're pretty strong. But, going on beyond that, me and Lauren was just training and working it in a commercial gym that I worked at the time as a personal trainer. And you know, there was another couple of guys who were really interested in powerlifting, and we decided to, you know, form the strength militia. Mm-hmm. So we just ran classes or group meetups where we would, you know, come and train and share, you know, philosophies and things like that there. And then from there, that was in 2015. Then in 2016, we got the, you know, our federation was only formed around May 2015.
So really?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so quite young. It's quite young. So from there, we decided to, you know, go to the national championship, try it out. And Bruna, as you know, she's a 63, multi-time national champion and European holder. She done really well and got her first invite to Worlds. And it's pretty much been a roller coaster ever since there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's been a great ride. And here we are today. I'm in the greatest gym in the world. So, yes.
Great, man.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome. So do you run the, is running the gym and the coaching stuff, your full-time job now?
Yeah, it's my full-time job. And, you know, I've worked in the office jobs, pen pushing and stuff. I just wasn't their guy, you know. I'm more suited to, you know, practical thinking and, you know, coaching, and it just ties in really, really well.
And it do a great job.
Yeah, like, it's great. Like, I mean, my favorite thing about definitely powerlifting and stuff is, like, getting to meet the great and wonderful coaches around the world. And, you know, I first met you, Peter, in the IPF coaching course, and then I met this big guy in Calgary last year. And, you know, it was, you know, I look around all the time and, you know, see the different countries, but I'm always like, the Austrian team are they're really good. They're a fun team and they're always laughing and joking. And, you know, you produce some really great athletes as well.
Yeah, we talked about yesterday, about a little bit during our dinner, about what's the great stuff in powerlifting. And I agree with you that meeting different persons from all over the world is, I think, it's the most important. To get there, you have to be good in powerlifting, of course. Yeah. So you have to train, you have to have the genetics, of course, and then you have to go there. But then when you are there, I think the best thing is just to meet up with a lot of different persons from all over the world.
Yeah.
And recognize that there is it's everywhere the same, and everyone has his and her stories about how he came into the sport. And
yeah.
Fun stuff. Yeah. And that's the great thing, I think, in powerlifting.
Yeah.
And in the sport in general.
Yeah.
Yeah, but especially in powerlifting, because when we were last year at the Worlds, we sat on a table. I watched videos and took seminars with Mike Tashira and the RTS crew, and just take a look around and you're sitting on the whole on the same table talking about training, coaching stuff and all this. The higher the level gets in powerlifting, the more open-minded the guys are. Yeah.
Yeah. If exactly.
The better the athletes you have, the better the coaches are, the more open-minded they are.
Yeah.
There's no secret behind the door, and everybody is not afraid. Nobody's afraid to talk about this programming and the stuff he uses, because everybody has to train anyway, and it's no secret way to build a world champion. So, so as you talked before about Bronner, I think it's not the biggest secret how you build a world record.
Yeah.
You have to train and have to be built for it.
Yeah.
Like we had with René Brunner, he had the Masters 1 world record in a squat.
I think it was 305.
And then squatted 309 in the 105 class.
Yeah.
So, but he always tells me he trains a variation of 531 from Jim Bendler. Yeah. Which is crazy. But
he started in 2014, something like that. Yeah.
But he's not training 531, typical program. It's just a structure, and then he mixed it with RPE and all this stuff, and he has a very good feeling when it comes to training.
And
has the best legs and genetics for a big squat. So
when he sits, he is as tall as when he's standing.
But you can watch him in the warm-up room. His first warm-up squat is as good as his third attempt.
Yes.
Yeah, it's just a bit faster or slower.
Yes.
Yeah.
Everything's the same.
I think that's one of the things that you can recognize the fun part in coaching is walking around and watching all the other nations and all the other strong athletes and what do they do.
Yeah.
And you can see at the first warm-up squat if they're going to achieve a medal or not. Or
you have to get
just 15th place or something like that. Because the all really good squatters have a nearly perfect squat. And it's pretty much there are exceptions.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, Jen Thompson went on the bench.
Because
I think every coach would try to correct her bench. But it's perfect for her.
This is one thing you can adjust with training. You know, there is genetics, but nevertheless, the people with the athletes with the best genetics squat the best, not because of the genetics, because it's not just the weight and the kilograms, but the squat looks the best. So this is hard training, and over years,
over years,
and that's the thing that has to come together to make a world class athlete.
Yeah,
not, genetics is good and it's the most important thing, but if you are not training to just try to show the people the genetics,
We talked about it in a podcast before. Yeah. What's your opinion on the genetic stuff? Do you think you can outperform genetics or in powerlifting as a sport?
I think that I've had lifters from that have really good genetics and lifters that don't have such good genetics. And for sure, the ones with the good genetics and the work ethic, that's important, that, you know, the good genetics, but they also have to have a real high work ethic, can go on and become like world champions. But if you've good genetics and, you know, you don't want to work or you're lazy, then not so much. The guys who, you know, aren't as gifted, but have, you know, an arm well and more work ethic, they can surely overtake the guys with the good genetics.
I agree with you completely. Yes, I think that the first 3, 4, 5 places in the world are, you know, there's a genetic stuff going on. But I think if you really take your heart to it and train and everything, then at least you can go to the world. I mean, this is a big thing, yeah?
Yeah, of course. And then when we look at someone like Jennifer Milligan, who has... You know, she has a good work ethic.
Yes.
She has other commitments like family life, but she chooses to get up at 5 a.m. to do her training.
that's crazy.
It's crazy, but that's what it means to become world champion. Mm-hmm. You know, so she has good genetics, but also
he does what he needs to do.
Yep.
But I think she's a good example because she moved up a weight class, didn't she?
Yeah,
She has no problem with it to take 1 or 2 years time to get world champion in that weight class again.
Yeah, yeah. Martina talked with her and she said she's a really she's a role model.
Yeah,
but she's a role model and not screaming it out, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
She's just a role model because she's the way she is.
Yeah,
and that's a good thing.
Yeah, like she's a mom.
Yes.
Things
are changing then.
Yeah. And she is, at least what I heard and what I saw, she has a very good training environment. Everybody's supporting her during training. I met her coach once.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And she's very strong and they are nice people. So I think that's a thing in powerlifting. Often we talked about it before, the stronger the guys get and the girls get, the more hearted and the nicer they are. There's a correlation between strength and a nice guy.
Absolutely. Yeah. And happiness.
Yeah, and happiness.
The most happy guy in the world is Benedict Magnusson.
Yes.
You can see he's super strong, and there was an interview with him, and they asked him, okay, hi, Benny. Describe with one word, how do you feel? Happy.
he is. What a guy. He's done a couple of seminars back in Ireland, and he really is.
You met him?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Met him. Yeah, he's, there's, in my, the commercial gym that I mentioned, they love strongman now, so he had Benny Magnusson over, and Eddie Hall as well, a couple of those guys. Mm-hmm. Have been in that commercial gym doing seminars. So they're real nice guys. Benny is the one that I met. I didn't go to the Eddie Hall one, but he was at the gym performing a seminar before he became world champion.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But like with Eddie as well, like he's got the genetics, but also, you know, he was swimming when he was younger.
Yes. He was an athlete.
I think Eddie Hall is one of the crews.
The national record, I think, in some of the... Like Bud Spencer.
I think Eddie Hall is one of the craziest guys compared to all of the other strongmen. He forced him to be big like that.
Yeah. Yes.
If we look at Hafthor Bjørnson or Brian Shaw, those guys are just incredible. Yeah. But he was just a normal strong guy
and
forced him to get that big.
I
have seen him once at FIBA.
At the FIBA last year.
This was I've seen Hafter Bjornsson and Brian Shaw and backstage and the Arnolds, and this was just huge. But when I saw Eddie, it was different kind of human being. You know, it was not he wasn't that you know tall.
Yeah, tall, yeah.
But I have never seen a man who was that wide.
Yeah.
And had that calves.
Yeah.
It was a calf. I don't lie to you. The calf was as big as my upper leg of my as my thigh. Believe me, never seen like something like that. He had to walk 1 meter with the feet apart, not to touch his calves and everything.
Yeah,
it was crazy. This was crazy, man.
And then Nilo, have you seen his recent pictures? Like the shit he's dropped, like I think couple of 20-30 kilos.
Yeah.
And he's like ripped.
He's insane.
He talked about probably switching to MMA.
Yeah.
But to boxing.
Then
his girl, his wife began to cry.
Crying.
Because, oh, you said you stopped it. No.
Okay.
Let's
talk about powerlifting.
Powerlifting again, yeah.
When we're coming back to, when it comes back to powerlifting and programming, and you got such great, you produce such great athletes.
Thank you.
Do you have some kind of main principles or programming structure that you use on all of your athletes?
So if I'm
a beginner or I wanna start powerlifting and I come to you.
Yeah. So most of my beginners, I'll put on like a template where I'll look at frequency and, you know, just, I wouldn't look at like max weights. I would just try and get them like what I would call RP based, just to get them moving to see what they're like. So if I see a set of five, it could be an RP eight, you know, I would run that for a while and then obviously just assess them and put them onto something more percentage based, maybe RP, but going along the level, I always try and incorporate training volume and also frequency. So, for instance, I'll only, for 99% of the time, have a competition deadlift and just an accessory deadlift.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe in some cases I'll have like RDLs and stuff, you know, as a third lift of the week. And when I go to squats, in volume phase, I absolutely love high bars because it just loads the quads the best. And then coming into competition, I'll look at stuff like just the competition work, transfer into that. But if they have issues with like hip shift and stuff, I'll add in like Frankenstein squats and things like that, you know, just to get them hitting the ass to grass and coming out of that. And then with bench, I like to really overload the bench because in Ireland we're notorious for having weak benches. Unless your name's Barry Pickett, who's the world record holder.
Yeah, the world record.
Yeah, but yeah, we're notorious. So I like to put in like about six variations a week. So I'll do.
On six different days or just six lots, like
so.
Two different exercises. Okay.
4 days. Well, we might have. Competition bench and then
close grip, for example.
Close grip, you know, for a back off. That's a super long day. You're going to typically be in the gym for 2.5-3 hours that day. But I like to have my squat and bench my main exercise. So competition, squat and bench on day one, and then on day two I like to have my competition deadlift.
Pretty much like
Mike, our
programs too.
Yes.
Yeah.
I think. All of us are looking a bit directed to this RTS stuff and where you have your competition squat, competition bench, and then the competition deadlift, especially when it comes near to the competitions then. Last year I did some squat bench and then probably an only bench day on one day, but I think it works out that way better.
Yeah.
Six variations is a lot.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. The most I ever did is about five, I think.
Yeah, I think for about that. Yeah.
But
I have some athletes that are training on 5 to 6 days, so it's no problem at all for them.
Yeah. Sometimes though, that is in the extreme case. Sometimes it's four, maybe five. I just like to overload the triceps.
That's a good point. Have you tried to put in some stuff like dumbbell bench press or incline bench press?
Yeah, we have, our gym's limited with the equipment. So if we do incline, we just get two bumper plates under a bench and then, you know.
Old school.
We're all old school.
Yeah.
So stuff like that. So maybe it's not as incline as the dumbbells are, but it's still, you know, hitting it in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also done that with the decline bench where we put it on the bottom of the bench, you know, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And then we've got two racks now. So we have pins and then you can go crazy with tempos.
Yeah.
You can even go 6 second negatives, 5 second negatives.
I used that last cyclist.
What do you think about those tempo variations, especially in every lift? For example, even in deadlifts, do you incorporate that?
Yeah.
Sometimes and when in the cycle? So I don't do it during the competition cycle too, or do you do it during some build up cycle?
I would have it in generally around every cycle because for the most part the tempo has cleaned up a squat, you know, in most cases.
We just talked about it last week.
So it, for going into the, like taking Brona for example, if I showed you a squat, because she's my longest client, but if I showed you a squat that she'd done in 2015 or 2016 words versus like the squat that she be done for the European record, it's like completely different. We've had tempos in for a couple of years now, but not always the same. Sometimes a 5 second, sometimes three.
Okay, was it more? Was she learning to stay more stable and upright during the tempo, or was she falling over in the early days? Or what was her fault?
She was having
hip shift.
Hip shift. So, you know, Mike had the kinetic specialist Megan Branson on his podcast. So we work with her for the European cycle.
Okay.
And like Brona squat transformed. She actually learned how to use quads and which was a big thing for her.
Yeah.
And sometimes when they have like over 95%, let's say, on their back, they're sometimes psychologically it changes. Mm-hmm. They don't squat like they do with 80%.
Mm-hmm.
So with Brona, everything clicked that cycle because she was switched on. Everything was working perfect. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she progressed really well. She was able to load the quads, things like that.
I'm sorry. But I saw you doing some small seminars at your Strength Militia also. Yeah. And I saw you correcting a squat if someone raises their hips first in a squat.
Yeah.
So what was your coaching cue?
Do you ever see... You have competitions all the time. I don't know what the German transition for chest up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I hear out of competitions all the time.
Yeah.
And basically Megan, who we work with, says that's an okay cue, but it's not the best cue if you say chest up, they will bring their chest up and leave their hips.
Yeah,
the hip will extend and they'll go into lumbar flexion.
Mm-hmm.
So what she said was like, keep everything super tight. And from the bottom, once you hit the bounce, drive your shoulders right up, and that brings everything up in sync, and your hips come through really
so
nice.
So they're thinking more with the shoulders.
Yeah. So from the bottom,
you
drive your shoulders up the top to lock it.
Okay.
And basically, what that does is it
like this.
Yeah, it's like poetry.
Because this is the most common problem I think we have to deal with, not. These days, not that much that 2 years ago, but hips up first was and is still, I think, the biggest problem in squats.
Yeah.
I played around with the cue, like, get your hips forward when you come out of the hole. But the cue with the shoulders is also nice.
Yeah.
But what I figured out is the tempo, I don't know exactly why, but they get a cue during tempo squats that they can really concentrate on just trying to bring their hips forward and not up.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that is why I, for example, doing a concentric tempo there are two different kind of tempos. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's, we just concentrate on the eccentric. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then the concentric it's called, can be really heavy. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you can do a really light tempo where you just concentrate on a concentric too. And I did this with Matty, for example. Mm-hmm. He's normally a really upright guy, but he's very sensible. Mm-hmm. With the squat. If he loses the bar just 1 centimeter, one centimeter in each direction, he just misses.
Yeah.
And he said that this, after 2 weeks of tempos, he had the feeling that he can just push everything against the bar and keep tight and upright. I'm very glad you said that because we talked about that and we just figured out the tempos very important.
The only difference that we have is that I don't give them an exactly number for the concentric part.
Yeah.
So just focus on the eccentric part and then just tell them get up as fast as possible. And if there's a, I don't know, probably a 3-3-3 squat, then I tell them, just use the weight that you can use it for a 3 concentric phase, 3 seconds or a 3 concentric phase. And Alex is more like, when I tell you in a concentric phase, when I tell you to stop,
you can stop.
You have to stop. Yeah.
So it's limits different the weight. Cues. Yeah. That limits the weight a lot. It's for a third variation during the week of the squat or for a deload phase, something like that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But and that's the problem. You cannot use it during a peaking cycle because then you just go off the weight too much.
You're holding back on a concentric phase.
Yes, and you shouldn't learn that.
A problem. On a competition cycle. But I get the meaning in the technical.
Yeah, I think you have to use, everything is fine. You just have to figure out when you can use it.
It's what works for the lifter, right? Yeah. And then with deadlifts as well, what we do is I used to just be like, pull the bar in and then drive, but now I'm like, load the quads, like really loading. Yeah. And like, if there's one,
That was our discussion because I'm totally up with you. Totally up. Use your quads, especially for the first centimeters off the floor.
Yeah.
And Alex always told me the deadlift is no quad movement.
Yeah, you can. I'm thinking a little bit different now, but I know. Do you know why? Because normally when you just see the deadlift from a side angle from the sagittal plane, there is nearly no moment arm on the knee joint. Yeah. But then I thought, okay, but you just feel the quads like crazy. If you just hold it, if you do post variation, they do it strict, you feel the quads. Yeah. And I thought about, okay, there must be something. And it's completely logical because the hamstrings are pulling your knee in flexion. Mm-hmm. Because they're pulling on both sides, and they're not pulling just to straighten your hips. Mm-hmm. They are pulling to flex your knees, and the quads have to overcome this flexion movement, the moments of the hamstrings. And that's why you just feel the quads are more involved than you think when you see just a biomechanical model.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this is why I agree absolutely that the quads are more important than everybody's thinking. And I was thinking half a year ago.
Mm. Yeah.
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 So like when the reason why it's such a powerful cue in, let's say, sumo for my guys is because if there's 150 kilograms on the bar, the quads is lifting 149 of those kilograms.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And then just one more kilogram to go before it leaves. So we drive the shoulders up, but drive the hips down hard.
So you just it's like a leg press.
Yeah, basically.
You just, like you hold it and it's just leg pressing it, push down.
Yeah. So you push your hips down.
Yeah.
And simultaneously you push your shoulders up, and then the only way for the hips to go
like
is through.
This.
Yeah. So that works really
and
well.
And then you have no problems with the lockout anymore after that, I think.
Because I think it's pretty much like you mentioned Megan before. She had a good post on her Instagram profile about sumo deadlift especially. Yeah. And then just, the driving from the hips. And then it's just a small lockout to the back.
Yeah.
And if you have a very good, if you look at a very good sumo deadlift, it's pretty much like that.
Knee-hip.
Yeah.
She's very, very, like, I think she has like a post doctorate in kinetic movement. So, and she specializes in powerlifting. So,
who's this man?
She works with Mike and the RTS crew. She does all the.
What's his surname?
Branson. But she's Megan. That Well, we can Megan.kinetic on Instagram.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
But she's very, very good.
We can look up the link to her website, and she's just amazing. Yeah, yeah. I saw some of her posts.
She's okay, that's really great. Good.
Yeah.
This is one of the, it's a little of pity, but one of the few women just doing some kind of, as I heard, some kind of really technical
things going on.
Does. And normally it's like, you know, only, I don't know, nothing technical.
Like Matt Wenning and.
Yeah, for example.
But I think, is it Matt Wenning or Donnie Thompson? One of them has a master's degree in biomechanic.
Really?
Yeah, one of them.
Ooh.
Yeah.
You have to connect with those guys.
Yeah.
They know one thing or another. That would be cool.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, when it comes to the next 6 months,
okay.
What's on your mind?
Well,
for sure the Worlds.
For sure.
Just to make sure you and your team are only focusing on classic raw powerlifting.
Yeah.
No equipped lifters or bench only.
Yeah, we don't even have bench only. We've only because we're so young. We've only been focused on classic up to this point. There's not in the IPF. There is no one really doing any equipped lifting in Ireland. Other federations, there's like what we talked about last evening, like Raw with Raps and stuff like that. But as a whole, it's just basically classic powerlifting. Mm-hmm. So over the next 6 months, obviously our main focus is Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
Currently, we've got two open lifters from our team, which is going to be CJ, who competed with Martina at Euros, and then Brona as well, who's a 63 lifter. And then we've got some returning juniors. We've got
I saw a video of CJ. She's an amazing deadlifter, isn't she?
Yeah.
What's her best?
Her best is 177 conventional.
But I saw 175 or something like that, like nothing.
Yeah.
She's in which weight class?
57.
Oh, 57.
That's crazy.
So we, after Worlds, which she got a bronze medal in conventional, we switched to sumo, and she got a bronze medal in sumo, with a sumo. So she, in 1 year, she got two bronze medals at two different international comps with two different deadlifts, which was, we were laughing about that at the end. But yeah, she's doing super. And her training's been going really well.
Yeah.
Up to this point. And she's actually she's been in sports her whole life. She was a cross country champion, competed for Ireland. She's like the captain of her hockey team, and she also does powerlifting as well. And she's passionate about all three. So, she's just a super athlete. And then we've got a sub junior 17-year-old called Karina. She's going to compete in 84 class this year because we were 72, but I felt like she was 75, 76, cutting into 72. It was like, she's only 17. I mean,
we have a sub junior athlete, and she's always a little bit, she competed in 63 at the Worlds, and she got a bronze medal in the deadlift.
Yeah.
And she's always a little bit over those 63. And
who?
Vicky.
Ah, Vicky, yeah.
And it's not her weight class.
But it was...
At this age.
No.
Yeah.
It was the same with Nina too. We decided with Nina to go to 50, but she was about 54 or 50, and we decided to let her down to 52, and then she made four medals.
Yeah, so that's a reasonable decision.
Yes, that's a super decision. It was a super decision.
The decision now is to go up. It was the last time.
And she knows it. She built a lot of muscles now, and she's but 55 with no body fat. No, there's no no talk about not that now. But it was a good decision.
Yeah,
yeah.
But I think this is
it was the last day. You know, can you? We were phoning on the last day from the nominations
to the final nominations.
The final nominations, and then he just changed that.
Yeah.
But sometimes it's a good decision. Yeah. But if you look at the long-term athletic development
don't press them down and start with all this shit in the teenagers.
Yeah.
That's not good.
I saw it with some junior and sub junior equipped lifters.
Yeah.
We got a sub junior equipped lifter in the 59 class. Yeah. And he stayed in the, he always cut it down in the 59 class for about, I don't know, 2 to 3 years.
Yeah.
And now he has for about 80 kilograms like that. But at this age, you, it's so easy to build muscle structure.
Yeah.
Yeah. So why do you hold back?
And of course, you have a lot of, you know, you have a lot of thinking going on about body weight, and you know, in those early ages, you know, everyone is talking about body fat and so on. And the last thing I want to do some is concentrate on the body weight.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. So you have to go down because you are too heavy for the class. Yeah. This is not good to tell them. Yeah. I agree with you.
Yeah, but with her as well, like she started 16 months ago with just 25 kilos on a squat, and she, I think recently she squatted 125 in training. She's never played sport, nothing. Just this is the first sport that she got into, and she absolutely loves it. So I'm like, you know, this time we'll go 84, and like my method behind that is that you'll see that it's better and you'll stay there because you, and this is the thing with girls. Girls have, I don't know in this country, but they have problem with going up weight class because they think that they're not going to look good. But, you can also still go up a weight class, but not be fully in it. Like you could sit midway until you're ready to be competitive in the class and then, you know, make the full adjustment up the way. But, we'll see how she gets on. We've got a couple more guys as well who's returning, but yeah, we normally get around five people from our team getting to compete each international camp, so we're happy with that. You know,
it's because it's not the Irish Powerlifting Federation that we're talking about. One team.
So,
I'm amazed because they just started 4 years ago, 4.5 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, our federation is since 1983, I think.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah. And that's insane, man.
Yeah.
So you built up a lot.
Yeah.
This is what it takes, you know.
You got a girl with over 500 wilks last year.
She had 500 wilks. She actually done a competition with
over Bronner.
Yeah. 500 wilks. So well,
it's the equipped man's limit
in Austria.
In Austria,
yeah,
yeah, for the team.
Yeah,
you know,
she's a special type of athlete because, it's like, do you ever see those type of athletes where you show them something twice and then they go, okay, I got it,
yeah,
and then other athletes, it's like, it takes a long time. You know.
Did she play any sports before?
No.
That's funny because
done the cervical class.
That's funny because most of the times I tell them, yeah, just do a lot of sports and play everything and find just movements and then it works. It clicks clicks like that if you get a coaching cue. But
yeah,
that's funny. That's good.
She was. I tell her this all the time. She was just born.
Born to
powerlift. Like most people, and especially because powerlifting is in, you know what, in Scandinavia, it's like it's a very important sport because they get funded and it's, you know, it's just different up there. In our country, like football would be one of the top sports, and then even golf is ahead of powerlifting. You know,
MMA.
Yeah, MMA. But another reason why like Worlds is so good is because, you know, everyone works hard, but after they get to, you know, go and spend some time socially and the fun stuff really, really starts happening. Like in Belarus, you were in the lobby in Hotel Belarus.
Yeah.
And, you know, the worst thing you could ever do is give powerlifters a hotel lobby and the beer is like 50 cents per bottle. Because, and then what you do there, you add Gino into the mix and that's it.
Gino was not one night in his room during the world.
No way. And the fun thing about that is like, I think Instagram Live was just starting. So I seen I was only actually over for a couple of days with a junior, mm-hmm. with Carrie, and she's actually going back to Wears this year, so mm-hmm. she's been making good progress. But this was her first time there, and you know, she didn't drink or anything, so she went back to the room, but I went down to check it out of the hotel lobby, and where was Gino? He was like, "Hey man, what's going on?" That's like, because you know, when you go away, he's like the larger than life character. He's just great, and everyone wants a piece of him. Mm. Everyone just wants to buy him a drink. Everyone wants to be around him. Yeah. You want to hear his crazy stories.
He was sitting right here.
Yeah,
on your chair.
Yeah,
right here. Yeah,
I watched. But he's a real interesting guy, and if you want a story, like you've got one, like yeah. you know, my favorite one's the Harry got into powerlifting, where he was on the Jersey, he was announcing a wet t-shirt competition on the Jersey Shore, and then yeah. a guy just come up to him and went, "Can you announce my powerlifting meet?" And he's like, "I don't know, guy, but I'll try."
But now he's referee too, yeah?
Yeah.
He told me he's referee.
He's yeah. a ref? Yeah, yeah, yeah. He got a ref.
He's a ref.
Yeah. But only at the US Nationals.
Yes, and I know, stuff but, like that. But he could be a referee.
He has so. his jacket with IPF speaker on it.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah, because Dona always wants him to use this jacket, and he always likes to dress.
Okay.
Like Gina yeah. dresses.
Yeah. But, yeah, he's a great guy. And the thing I like about him as well is, like, if it was a failed lift, because not everybody that's in the crowd understands the rules, he'll explain like why he failed.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know?
That's very important.
Yeah.
Yes, that's very important. It's kind of, you know, it's not that easy to be a good speaker, because you want to help the athletes, but yeah. then you have a, you know, 2-1 decision, and you cannot speak against the referees.
Yeah.
But you have to speak for the athletes. So it's kind of hard to figure that out, but
yeah.
he's not that bad.
In yeah,
that.
He's very good. Good. Yeah.
Yeah. yeah, just that's yeah. good.
He's always a good guy to have.
Mm. And, yes,
and then there's other funny stories. I mean, that he's talked about. The story where in Belarus, like the Irish team was like, I was there for 2 days, as you know. But everyone wanted to hang out with the Irish team, and I was talking to like the American guys that I know, and they were saying, yeah, like last night got crazy. We wrestled on the grass outside the Hotel Belarus. And I was like, and we had our shirts off and all this type of crazy stuff.
It was like in WWE wrestling?
Yeah, like
there was great.
People jumping off the top of the cage.
That was right.
Very good.
That's amazing.
But we do this stuff right here.
Yeah.
It's great. Yeah. It's great. It spreads all over the world. It's good.
Yeah. It's good. I think they should give the best lifter in the world this year money in a bank briefcase.
Oh, yeah, so he's all right. And the belt.
We talked about it yesterday.
Yes.
We're skipping all of this trophy stuff.
Yes.
Bullshit. We got to get belts.
Yeah.
Belts. A championship belt. Man, we will do it.
Yeah,
in Freistadt, there will be, and this is an announcement from...
From the president?
From the president right here. In Freistadt, we will... The winner of the female and male national championship will get a belt. Powerlifting belt. We have to do that.
We gotta do that.
Yeah. We have to check where we can find some
belt. I have a link for you who makes the WWE belts, the real ones.
Really?
In America, yeah.
Perhaps you can take a belt who has we have to do this. That's like you have to give it to the next to the next
lift. Like,
yes,
yeah.
Like we will do
like
it like
a real
that.
Championship
yes,
belt.
And if you lose it you cut your legs off, but something like that.
Yeah.
Okay. And can you give me the link?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, great,
I'll give it after.
Yeah.
I want to see this happen.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's 24/7, right? So you have to bring it the words and all. And if you get pinned, you lose the belt.
Yeah, you lose the belt. Yeah.
We bring a referee.
Yeah, referee. And he slides in.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, 1, 2, 3.
Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wrestling is awesome.
Yeah, like, you guys are the right. Yeah. You guys are right. Yeah.
Yeah, it is.
I know my wife is laughing so hard right now. Yeah. She does all the podcast stuff.
Yeah.
She's one of the greatest wrestling fans I know.
Ah.
Yeah.
You can't be a powerlifter if you're not a wrestling fan, right?
No.
Yeah.
No, no, really. You are right.
That's completely why Matty right. is such a strong lifter.
Matty is the biggest WWE fan and wrestling fan. And he's, you know, the other one
we talked about. We met.
And he's super strong. So so we have to tell him that if he raises his fan standard, he will get stronger.
Yeah, it is. That's it.
Yeah.
And then we have some switches from face to heel and all this stuff in the Austrian Powerlifting Federation.
Yeah.
Awesome.
By the way, we get the ring in the gym.
Yeah.
In the future. Yes, we just throw away.
We just need the space.
No, we have it. Oh, where these blue mats are lying. We just throw them out because nobody needs a mat. This is no playground. And we put in a wrestling ring.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if I show you the gym? Or Peter, and he goes around with you, and then he goes upstairs, and then suddenly there is a flying elbow drop from this top rope on a guy, and you say, "What's that?" And this is wrestling. Why do you ask? And I'm sure you get you sign a member.
Yeah,
yeah.
Right away. Sure, yeah. And if you don't, get the fuck out of here.
Or go in there.
Yeah.
You should have like wrestling shows, and then outside interference, someone jumps out of the chair. Gets him over there.
Yeah.
Okay. Calls the ref in.
Great.
And then lifts the money in the bank briefcase.
Yes, and the belt. The money in the bank.
Okay.
Peter, this was our first podcast in English.
In English, yeah. Probably not the last one because we got some invitations already sent out.
Yes.
Because, you know, probably one of our main crushes is Steve Ringgold.
Right. Yes.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We love him.
Yeah. He's a great.
I mean, the most beautiful person in the world is Martina.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then there's coming nothing for a long time, and then there's Peter. Sorry, but I can't say Jasmine.
You can say
Jasmine. Then there's Peter. Then there's Peter, and then there's Steve.
Steve.
Yeah.
Always well dressed.
Always fine. Hairstyle great.
Yeah.
On point.
On point.
Is he a wrestling fan?
We have to. He has to be. He's. What was the name of the wrestler who was dressed like a policeman?
The policeman.
Big Boss Man. Big Boss Man.
Big Boss Man. Yes, it's Big Boss Man. I'm sure he's a fan of Big Boss Man.
Okay. So
thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you, guys.
For staying here and being here. And this is an official invitation for you and your team to hang out at the gym and use it as a training ground and the seminar room and everything.
Yes.
Just stay in contact.
Yes. Of course. Thank you guys for having me.
You're very welcome.
It's been a pleasure. It's been fun.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
We say good night. Goodbye.
Hasta la vista.